When it comes to weight management, we tend to focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. That's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up today.
Before we get started with this episode of Bench with Bubba, I wanted to talk to you about RotoBaller.com. Win big in 2022 with RotoBaller.com's MLB and DFS Premium Pass, which includes 15 exclusive lineup tools, daily DFS cheat sheets, and our new Team Sync platform. Use RotoBaller's exclusive hitter projections, pitching planners, DFS value plays, research stations, lineup optimizer, and more to help you win big. For a limited time, get your MLB Premium Pass for an extra 10% off with your discount code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A. Just visit rotoballer.com, use promo code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A for 10% off the Premium Pass for the MLB season, and get started to rotoballing like a boss. Back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 18, as we chug along through the rest of the fantasy baseball season. Going to talk about some more injury news. I'm just going to say injury news because that's what it is now, not recent news. Got some big ones, too, this week as we get to the stretch run here. Go over our weekend matchups, as always, because, you know, we might have split again for the upteenth time this year. We'll see how that one goes. And then we'll talk about an awesome Bloom board about some pitch mix changes since the All-Star break. And we appreciate your guys' feedback on that. That keeps it more entertaining for us to kind of bounce that off of you guys. So check that out. But first off, I am on Twitter at BDentric, and my co-host is always on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how we doing, man?
I'm great. I'm excited. Yeah, like you said, we got a lot of buzz around this board. It's going to be kind of the topic of our show. This is kind of fantasy football time, and baseball interest is dying down, but not for the loyal listeners of Bubba and the Bloom here. There was a lot of good comments and questions and all that kind of stuff. So I'm excited for tonight's show. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, because I'll let you guys behind the curtain. I know we talked about last week, like, we enjoy doing content over playing and all that kind of stuff. I love doing content. Obviously, I podcast all the time, but this time of year is very tough to do podcasts because the content's hard to do. So when you guys are like excited and interested in stuff, it makes it so much more fun for me. So keep that kind of passion coming, and we will have a lot of fun doing this for you. But we'll get to the negative stuff first, and that is the IL. Lots of IL stints. Zach Wheeler goes to the IL with right forearm tendinitis. I looked up. I haven't seen any deeper reports yet on that, unless I'm missing something, but it's retroactive. He can be activated on September 6th. They're hoping it's minor, but I hear right forearm tendinitis, and I am not excited, Ryan.
No, those are like outside of maybe shoulder soreness. Maybe those are like the three worst words that you want to hear from a pitcher. Phillies are being very vague about it. The worst possible case is, hey, precursor to Tommy John. Or maybe it's just a dead arm and that's what they're calling it. And they're saving Wheeler for a stretch run, which I don't know, kind of doesn't make sense. Philly needs every bullet that they can use in the stretch run. So it's tough, man. Zach Wheeler has been a horse throughout, you know, the last few seasons, 182 innings, 2018, 195, 213 innings last year. But as we've talked about, had that shoulder issue in the offseason that delayed his ramp up. And who knows, maybe that's all connected. But certainly awful timing for anyone on a fantasy postseason run. And in terms of it looks like it's going to be Bailey Falter who throws strikes. That's probably about the best attribute I can give. Doesn't walk too many guys, but gives up a lot of loud contact, a lot of fly balls, and not many Ks, and that's not a combination you want really in any kind of league.
And he pitches Friday night, so if you guys want to play some DFS, head that direction. Just gonna throw it out there. Yeah, yes. That's a place to go. But yeah, sucks for Wheeler. I might have missed you saying it when I was looking up something here, but I know we probably need to get a little more information, obviously. Yeah. So it's hard to drop right away, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I'm not dropping at all yet until we get more. It's vague, which we and Walker Buehler's on our list of updates, mm-hmm. but we talked about Walker Buehler last week and how we were pretty nervous that the Dodgers were being vague and what triggered mm-hmm. the surgery for Buehler. I don't know, kind of similar kind of vibe with Wheeler I'm getting. I hope not, but yeah, you got to hold until we get more information if you've got nope. Wheeler.
And we'll skip right to that. Yeah, Buehler, we said it last week, how vague it was. It felt like someone's having a Tommy John surgery, even though they didn't say Tommy John, which they usually do say, because who cares anymore? Everyone has Tommy John surgery. And then he goes and has Tommy John surgery, the second of his career, Ryan. And there's not a great track record. And I know things are different. Technology is a lot better this year, these days. But two Tommy John surgeries doesn't have the best track record compared to one, obviously. So he won't pitch at all next year, so it's kind of a null topic for now. But I'm kind of just worried about the long-term success of Buehler. But for the rest of this year, I guess it just creates more of a certainty in the Dodgers rotation.
Yeah, certainty. I mean, they've got Dustin May. I mean, the Dodgers will be fine. Don't worry about him.
I know.
Don't shed a tear. With Buehler, yeah, out all of next year, he's going to be in 2024. That's going to be Buehler's age 29 season for a guy who will have thrown 65 innings just this year. So, on the one hand, the timing of the surgery is kind of okay for Buehler because you're going to get that kind of full recovery, should be ready to go by the start of 2024. But yeah, for someone with a declining fastball, somebody who is now going to be approaching 30, long-term keeper wise, that's tough. You hate to see that.
Yeah, it's no good at all. Another thing we hate to see is the words thoracic outlet syndrome. That is not good. Usually it revolves around pitchers, though, and we have a better idea of what that is. So it kind of felt weird that Jared Walsh had it. Again, though, it makes sense where the power went this season, because shoulder injuries, the thoracic outlet area, that's going to zap all of your power pretty much. And so that disappeared. I honestly haven't found and don't know what the recovery time is for a position player, a potential DH, compared to pitchers. We know it's a long recovery period. Maybe one of our great injury guys on Twitter can help us with that. But regardless, I'd be kind of surprised if he's ready to go. And usually takes about a year or so to get fully back from a shoulder injury when it comes to power. So what's your thoughts on this Walsh deal?
I've got the same exact thoughts as you, which doesn't make for compelling radio. But thoracic outlet, yeah, is typically kind of like a death knell, honestly, for a career, for a pitcher. You think thoracic outlet and their pitchers are kind of done. The track record there is not good. And I honestly don't know what the prognosis is on the hitting side. That's one of the, and subtle plugs here, one of the things at First Pitch Arizona that we talk about, there's a lot of focus on injury risk, injury analysis. Matt Cederholm goes out there every year. James Ferretti goes out there every year. And I'm definitely going to be hitting those guys up to see what they think about Walsh, just because, yeah, I honestly do not know what this means long term. Obviously, he's out for the season, but I don't know what it means for him next year. If it is kind of the death knell that it is for pitchers as it is for hitters, that's something I need to look into.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. We're all kind of in the dark on this one. So I'm real curious. And I guess bright side is Angels are out of it, so we don't really have to worry about it this year. And the replacements for Walsh aren't really anything special.
We get to see the ghost of Mike Ford for the rest of the season for the Angels. That lineup just gets
even worse. About certain teams just hoping this, they could play with a running clock right now. The Angels would be one of them. So we'll see how that plays out. Well, you said it in the comments here on this part of the outline, but also I'll leave that comment for you. But Nestor Cortez to the IL. And first off, this stinks because Nasty Nestor has just been amazing. And this hurts fantasy. This hurts the Yankees. And it hurts the Yankees because they could probably use another left-handed pitcher. They don't have anymore, Ryan. So what are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of our ode to Jordan Montgomery.
Anytime Jordan Montgomery can be mentioned on any show I am on, I am a huge fan.
Already has more wins, four with the Cardinals in four starts than he did with the Yankees. Three wins in, I think, 21 starts. Something like that. Yeah. So it's crazy. So yeah, if you're a Yankee fan, you certainly wish you had that one back, especially if you're Brian Cashman. Sucks for Nestor Cortez. Like, awesome story, awesome dude. Like, love to watch him pitch. Just the way he knows how to pitch, different release points, different timing and windups, kind of Cueto-esque, that kind of thing. So hope he's back soon. I mean, it sounds like Clark Schmidt is getting called up and will pitch this weekend for the Yankees. In terms of like pickup wise, he's not stretched out enough yet. 56 mm-hmm. pitches, 52 pitches and 60 pitches in his last three outings. So Schmidt pitched 60 against the Mets a couple days ago. So that's what you've got going on. He has not gone more than three innings in any of those starts. So you're probably not getting a win if you're desperate for wins and you've got a 1.6 strikeout to walk ratio, which is pretty terrible for Clark Schmidt. So you're holding on to Cortez until we hear more, but you're also not picking up Clark Schmidt.
Yeah, I hope it's just a minor thing because, again, maybe they're just resting him. But maybe it's a way to cut back innings for him before the postseason. Like, honestly, it could be something as silly as that. I doubt it, but it could be. You never know. So, I'm trying to be optimistic here. But we'll see how that one plays out. Real quick, I was asking some other guys recently this. When it comes to the Yankees for the bullpen, obviously Holmes has been a mess. He's been kind of – he's on the IL, I believe, now. You have Aroldis Chapman, who's still not getting trusted. You got Lois Siga's been getting the job done. Wandy Peralta got a save. If, say, you're heading into Fab this week, and I know you write a Fab column, how are you approaching this bullpen? Because it doesn't – it's a committee, a full-on committee, and there's really no rhyme or reason right now to me, except besides maybe matchups.
Besides matchups, I mean, my – if I had to, like, kind of gun to my head, I had to pick someone, I'd go Sweet Lou.
Yep.
Of all people, I'd go Lou Trevino. Trevino pitched, let's see, just looking at usage, pitched Sunday and got the win Monday the following night. Obviously, after 32 pitches Sunday night for Trevino, Jonathan Loaisiga got the save on Monday night. And then Wandy Peralta, of all people, Tuesday, a 5-pitch save. I think Trevino is not the guy, but I think if you're doling out saves, he's probably the top guy there on a Yankee team. I know they've been struggling, but like, that's a team that's going to get some saves. So,
yeah.
I don't know, buck or two on Trevino this weekend. Like, you kind of hold your nose and enter that bid, but that would be the pick for me.
Yeah. I think you're probably right there just because the experience, they traded for a reason, as you mentioned, stuff like that. The one caveat I will mention is, I did this a lot last year with, Mr. Lasagna, Johnny Loaisiga. You know, Baseball HQ has a saying called draft skills, not roles sometimes. And Johnny Loaisiga is filthy. And he was filthy last year. Didn't look great to start the year, but lately has looked like the guy of old. At worst, he can get you ratios, strikeouts, and a potential even winner save. Just going to throw that out there. This time of the year when streaming pitching is difficult. So I think you're right with Trevino's probably the go-to guy. If deeper leagues are still looking for guys, don't sleep on Johnny L for just some extra help on your roster.
It's funny, just real quick, I was looking up Loaisiga as you were talking, and yeah, 5.76 ERA this year, 1.48 WHIP. Like, those surface stats look terrible, but then you dig a little deeper into the game logs, he hasn't given up. Let's see, he's given up 3 earned runs since the All Star break. So yep. That's he's peaking at the right time. I'll say mm-hmm. that.
That's the beauty of sometimes playing DFS a lot, because you see a little things that you can see below the surface stats. Ryan Pressly, this finally happened. I'm glad teams do this finally, because he's been like day-to-day with a neck issue, day-to-day with a neck issue. Well, now they put him on the IL, so you don't have to sweat it anymore. It's been a few different options in the back of that pen. I've seen guys get blown up, another guy get a shot, so on and so forth. So how would you approach this? Because the Astros are good. They're going to keep winning baseball games. There's going to be saves to be had. Like, it's not like, you know, some of these teams, you're like, just don't waste your time with them. There's going to be saves in Houston.
This is one you want to target this weekend because, yeah, Houston wins games. And that kind of fluke. Like, I had Pressly, I think it was last year, where he had like 22 saves or something as the full-time closer on Houston, who won like over 100 games. But that's an anomaly. I mean, you want guys. Closers on teams that win. And I would go after Rafael Montero. I think just the usage patterns, I think Montero is the plan B behind Ryan Pressly. Obviously, we've got a few nights. We've got Friday and Saturday night to see what Houston does. Maybe Will Smith, but like, the thing with Will Smith is he's the, I believe, the only lefty in that entire bullpen. Right, so yeah. Houston, I mean, probably is going to use Will Smith in those kind of leverage situations against lefties. So depending what we see Friday, Saturday night, but I go Rafael Montero.
I'm with you on Montero. They gave Neris a shot the other night, and it was not pretty. It brought back Philadelphia flashbacks. It was rough. So, I'm with you on that one. Speaking of Ryan Pressly, how are you feeling about that 2023 draft pick right now with a stiff neck issue for like the second year in a row? I'm kidding. We debated
your Devin Williams pick is looking a little bit better than my Pressly pick.
Oh, this is great.
It's bad how I'm like, and I put this in the chat, I'm like rooting for the guys that I picked in that draft. Like Wilson Contreras has gone off. He was my seventh round pick. I'm like happy, but it doesn't count because this draft is for next year. Like I'm in like a bizarre times game.
Because we're idiots. We drafted a 2023 draft in August. We're idiots. I can't, but it was awesome.
Not deny that.
Yeah, crazy happy idiots is what we were. Zach Greinke goes to the IL. This is an interesting one because, you know, Zach Greinke just kind of, you figured he'd never get hurt. He doesn't throw the ball hard. He just kind of throws, doesn't do much. So I wouldn't have thought anything to be too concerned about with Greinke. And I didn't think, you know, he had feelings or injuries or anything. But he goes to the IL. Looks like he'll be hopefully just 2 weeks, but you never know. It's an arm issue, shoulder issue. So we'll see how it goes with Zach Greinke. What's your thoughts?
I mean, more so than just fantasy wise, I wonder what the future is for Greinke, right? Point. Like, I mean, maybe this is just 2 weeks and that sort of thing, but if you end your age 38 season with forearm tightness, you've kind of pitched, you went back to the team that you started with in Kansas City and you pitched the season. Like, I wonder if this might be kind of the beginning of the end. As morbid as that sounds, I don't know if he comes back next year or what, but
100%.
Hell of a career if this is it.
Yeah, I hope he becomes like a high school baseball coach because he's not made for the big stage, but you think of the stuff he could teach a high school kid if, you know, the parents would allow it, because he probably wouldn't do it in the most politically correct way. I'm not saying he'd be like racist or anything, but just wouldn't have a filter, like wouldn't know when he's being bad. So like it'd be really funny with Zach Greinke. I'd be a fan of that.
And
so,
just one of the, like, I know this is almost like a post-mortem, like the guy probably maybe comes back, maybe he pitches in 2 weeks, but like one of the more underrated careers like of all time. I mean, like this
Cy Young candidate for a while.
Cy Young candidate, 216 ERA back in 2009, a 166 ERA in 2015. I'm cherry picking here, but a 293 ERA in 2019. Like, he's been very good across like multiple decades and has reinvented himself many times. So that, to your point, like if someone knows pitching on this earth more than Zach Greinke, I'd kind of like to meet him.
He will be a Hall of Fame discussion for a few years. Like, there's no doubt about it. He was that good, like you said. So I think a lot of people that kind of maybe got into baseball recently because of fantasy or something, I don't think they realize how good he was.
Yep.
So that'll be definitely something to see going back. Brandon Belt, back to the IL with knee inflammation. It's been bugging him all year. His production has shown from that. It's been bad. I dropped him a few weeks ago. I just couldn't do it anymore. He's supposed to have an MRI on Friday, honestly. The Giants are technically still in the wild card race. I don't think they're in the wild card race, to be honest, but they technically are. I think they should have shut him down. That'd be my two cents. Only thing is, I think he's a free agent after this year, so they'll want him back for the final weekend, probably, just to give him a little swan song in the bay. But what's your thoughts on this one? Because it's not pretty.
I guess I'm going down like a dark spiral tonight, man. But there were also whispers of like Belt, of this injury affecting him past this year as well. And that just kind of sucks. Cause I've always said, like, I always want to see what a peak Brandon Belt could do outside of San Francisco. That park, even though it has been better in recent seasons on the hitter side, that park has cost that man plenty of home runs over the years. So not a good report. Can't trust Brandon Belt the rest of the way. Looks like we've got Wilmer Flores at first base. He's the guy who's been starting the last couple nights. Maybe in situations against lefties you want to use him, but I'm not that interested. And you're right, Bubba, like maybe the Giants just take their time and bring him back, Belt back, that is, this kind of final week for that swan song.
Another generation or another legacy from the Giants will be gone after this year. And Belt was an awesome one. But yeah, I wanted him out of the ball. I've been one of the biggest belt defenders in years, and people say he's not good. I'm like, no, he is. That ballpark destroys him. Like, he's very good.
It's a running joke in the baseball forecaster. I think we put an upside projection of on belt like 5 or 6 years in a row of like 35, 40 home runs. We've always believed in the power, and I don't want to say it never materialized, because he's definitely had some spurts, especially in recent years. But yeah, you do kind of wonder what if.
Yep, what if. We don't have to go too deep on this, but I just wanted to let everybody know that maybe lived under a rock. Fernando Tatis Jr., obviously suspended for a while, is now having shoulder surgery. The reason I wanted to mention this, though, is I figured he should have done it a long time ago. And secondly, the reports, because the Padres are not happy with him right now, with this situation. Like, they've been very vocal about this. So the report came out was Fernando Tatis Jr. is finally having the shoulder surgery the Padres wanted him to have at the beginning of the season that he said no to. So, like, they're making a point that, like, hey, you want to know another thing he doesn't listen to us about? Shoulder surgery. So, any thoughts on this?
PR. I like it. It's the right move. Like, yeah, 100%. I mean, you're out. Like, this is the time to do it. I mean, I can see before the season, like, the season's coming. Tatis wants to play. Kind of get it. But, yeah, you have to do this now. There's no other window that it makes sense for. So, I mean, we'll see. Revisit back in or next February, March, see how he looks. That's going to be an ADP. That's going to be completely wild. I know we talked a little bit last week, so I don't want to go too much. But fourth round pick in our 2023 draft, that could go second round. That could go sixth, seventh round, all depending on the updates we get next spring.
Yeah, because that draft pick was only with the suspension. He did not know about the surgery just yet. So it gets more fun indeed. Byron Buxton to the IL. And the fun, I don't know if funny is the right thing. This is like his first real IL stint of the year, surprisingly. He's missed a lot of time, but this is like the first like big IL stint for Byron Buxton this year. He has a hip injury. He has a knee injury that both may need surgery this offseason. That's how much they have been affecting him, and he's still doing what he's doing. So what's your thoughts on this one?
I mean, he's back on. I don't know if he ever left it for me, but he's back on the do not draft list. You're right, Bubba. Like, technically the first IL, but he's been playing hurt all season. And now we know why Buxton has been getting every third day off and that sort of thing. So it's funny how all that news comes out now that Buxton is pretty much done. So, I mean, even without the even injury stuff be damned, like, this is a guy, 51% fly ball rate, strikeout rate was through the roof this season. Like, he almost has turned into a like power only guy. I mean, the dude was hitting 224, and at HQ, we've got an expected batting average like 250. Like, that strikeout fly ball combination is not good. And recently he started running a little bit more, but just six steals, man. Like, I mean, what are you paying for a Byron Buxton who is even fully healthy? Like, what does that stat line look like next year? So yeah, back on the DND list for next year.
Yeah, they just paid him too, which is pretty crazy. This one sucked to start off your Monday for anybody that had an early lineup lock. Vinny Pascantino goes to the IL with a shoulder injury, and he was raking before he got hurt. And now they're acting like it's nothing too severe, should be back rather soon. But again, shoulder injury, power guy, it's never comfortable. And before I let you go, the one other thing I'll mention, because I've been researching his info the last couple of days just to keep up to date on what's going on. One of the better Twitter follows right now. He's new to Twitter, and he's amazing. He? Oh, he's just funny. He just like quote tweets things, and you can tell he's a kid on Twitter having a good time. So I'm just going to throw it out there. He's at least entertaining. You can tell by his tweets that he's just a good kid you want to root for in baseball. Like, so he's innocent. But back to the real thing here, the injury. How are you approaching this?
The timing, yeah, it just sucked. Like, there's not much worse things in our game than a Monday injury. And even, yeah, like you said, in Vinny P's case, I think this was like his first at bat of the week or right after it or
yep.
Right there. So, like, that's a killer. It sounds minor, so I think you're holding on to Vinny P and hope that he comes back September 2nd when he is eligible. I don't know what the Royals are being the Royals with kind of replacements. Like, I think they should just play Nick Prado at this point and see what they have at first base. But Prado's only started one of the last three games, all of those against right-handed pitching, and Prado's a lefty. So that's what I'd like to see happen, but I can't really even recommend picking up Prado right now because the playing time's just not there, but I'd love to see it.
100% with you on that one, so we'll have to see how that plays out. Michael Kopech, it's been a rough year for Michael Kopech, a guy with his quote-unquote dominating stuff as he has. The strikeouts have not been there at all, which has been troublesome. And his last start, he didn't get out of the first inning, was getting hit around, left with a knee injury, and is now on the 15-day IL. This is a guy that was just tough to roster, period, down the stretch here, and now he goes to the IL. So what do you got on this one?
And, like, I could absolutely just see this, the White Sox kind of shutting this down. It's been such a, I mean, a good season on the surface for Kopech. You kind of alluded, Bubba, to the skills not totally being there, and they're not. So there was some luck behind that 3.58 ERA. But for me, it's the workload. It's a guy who has a pretty long laundry list of injuries and who had kind of been a hybrid reliever last season. All of a sudden now has thrown 111 pitches on a White Sox team that is probably not going to make the postseason. So I might be aggressive with a drop here on Kopech if I have him in, even in like 15 teamers, just because I don't see the reason for the White Sox to really push this anymore, given the kind of uncharted territory that they have Kopech at. And I mean, age 26, Kopech, I think, still has a bright future despite kind of the lackluster skills this season. But I think you kind of take this season as a step forward and move on to 2023.
Yeah, he's had at least one TJ, if not two, actually, now I think about it. And so it's still kind of ramping up to what we used to see with him type thing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, like you said, take the positives out of the year. Hopefully he can figure it out going forward. The Reds, Graham Ashcraft was looking like he was maybe starting to figure things out. Had a big strikeout game the other day. And then he goes to the IL with bicep soreness, which, again, not good. So he's having an MRI, I believe, yesterday. So I haven't seen the results on that. But another one on a Reds team that just cannot keep pitchers in the rotation this year. It is unbelievable.
It's bad, man. They're down to Mike Minor, Luis Sessa, Nick Lodolo. Nick Lodolo is fantastic. And Justin Dunn. Like, that's their, like, four-man rotation right now. I don't know who they're throwing out there. Like, fantasy takeaway, stay away, of course, from Reds pitching. But if you've got anybody going, any hitters going against the Reds, especially at Great American Small Park, like, that is just that's a gold mine the rest of the season, because that pitching staff is God, it wasn't good. And then you lose Ashcraft. And I kind of say that like as a bad thing. And I guess maybe he was turning around a little bit, but even Ashcraft wasn't that great either. So it goes from a terrible rotation to, I don't know, I can't think really of a bad word worse than terrible, but whatever.
Yeah. Really, really bad is what we'll say.
Something like that.
So, and yeah, like you said, the starters are bad. The bullpen's bad. Just stack. See how it goes. This one hurts, but to be fair, it's been a bad year. I've already dropped him in a lot of places, so it's not the end of the world for our boy Nathan Eovaldi, as I've learned with HQ. The only way that I can find his player page is Nathan Eovaldi, not Nate.
We've got
Eovaldi.
A few, yeah, we've got a few, like, proper names lingering around.
He heads to the IL with neck and shoulder soreness. He was going to try to play through it, was getting pushed back, missed, I think, one start, and they said, screw it, go on the IL. So is what it is with Mr. Eovaldi, who's lost some velocity of late as well.
That's been the big thing, right? Like, Eovaldi, he looked fantastic in April, 32-3 strikeout to walk ratio in 5 starts, 2.51 ERA, a sub-1 whip. But that month, I'm going to read out this monthly velocity, 96.8 in April, 96.9 in May, looking good. Then got hurt in June, down to 95.4, 94.7 in July, 94.3 in August. Like, that is not good, and the skills went down with that velocity. So I just think of all, I mean, of all these, a competitor, he's pitching through, he's hurt, he's been hurt, and the Red Sox just kind of have to say, all right, we're not doing this anymore. And I think that's what they did. So it sucks, man. I mean, obviously I'm a huge Eovaldi guy, have been the last couple years, kind of admittedly got a little lucky last season with the injury, luck with him going 182 innings, 195 strikeouts, but this was always the risk with him, was the injuries, and we're seeing that pile up now. So I'd be surprised if Eovaldi makes any kind of dent here the rest of the season, so he'd be a drop for me, as much as that pains me to say.
100% with you on that one, and they don't have a lot of replacements in that rotation either, so buckle up.
The line kind of stopped at, like, Cutter Crawford, who got destroyed.
And that's been rough lately, too.
That dude, he's on my main. That guy, I'm not going to, you know, I'll admit it, ruined my Friday night last Friday, man. 9 earned runs. Like that was brutal. So he's in there, and like Michael Wacha, but it's getting bad quick in Boston.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Eric Hosmer to the IL. Take that for what you wish. I guess the bright side is Frenchie Cordero's getting playing time. Tristan Cassis is crushing it in the minors. And before I let you go on this one, so Christian Arroyo's been banged up. Xander Bogaerts is banged up. Did you see who played shortstop for the Boston Red Sox? I don't know about Thursday night, but Wednesday night.
And stole a base tonight, and that would be Bobby Dalbec.
Unbelievable.
He's now a shortstop who steals bases. So that's where we're at in 2022.
Oh man, crazy stuff.
The while we're on this, you mentioned Tristan Casas. Something that's been going around, I know this isn't on our outline, but I think it's good to bring up. Something going around, there's rumors of Corbin Carroll coming up very shortly, Gunnar Henderson, who is the number 2 prospect at HQ fantasy-wise behind Carroll, and then Tristan Casas as well. In the new CBA, there's a provision that if your player wins Rookie of the Year, you get an extra pick in the following year's draft. And what teams are, I think, figuring out is they can call up their top prospects, get that cup of coffee in September, still be rookie eligible in 2023, and qualify for that pick if things turn out okay next year. So do not be surprised if we get kind of a wave of really high level prospects being called up around September 1st. Just kind of throw that out there if you've got fab money left.
Yeah, actually, they could start doing it any day because the 23rd was the day where they would accrue just enough or not enough time to be eligible. But the rosters expand September 1st. That's probably what we're waiting for, as you mentioned. But yeah, teams are getting wiser to that. So hopefully Casas comes up. That'd be great. You mentioned Henderson, Corbin Carroll. We get to see Cade Cavalli this weekend for the Nationals. We'll see how that one plays out. That'll be an interesting one. Figured you would have picked him. But, oh, we didn't.
Ineligible.
We agreed not to.
Per the Constitution.
Yes, we agreed not to, but we'll see how that one plays out as well. A couple more here. Jonathan Scope goes to the IL with an ankle sprain. He was kind of day-to-day for a while. They put him on the IL. Been a brutal year for Jonathan Scope. He's been cut on all my teams way before this, but this might end things a lot sooner for some.
I just like random facts. I'm a stat geek. Random fact of the year for Jonathan Scope is he stole as many bases in 1 week, 4 steals, as he did the previous 3 years combined this season. That's all I got.
Yeah, it's been a rough go for him, but my dumb brain will probably look to buy the dip next year when it comes to Jonathan Scope. So we'll see. Long time before that one takes place. And last but not least, Aaron Ashby to the IL for the Brewers. It's been a interesting year for Ashby. Lots of ups, lots and downs, not consistent, young pitcher. What do you got on this one?
I'm glad you bring that aspect of this up because this guy, I'm not thinking more for 2023 with Ashby. Like the ceiling is I think like enormous. Strikeout upside is immense. You've got a strikeout rate of 27% and a ground ball rate of 56%. Like there are not many starting pitchers. This will probably be an offseason bloom board. Actually, I know it will. There are not many starting pitchers in baseball with that combination of strikeouts and ground ball. So from that aspect, like I could see Aaron Ashby being a complete ace. The flip side of that is injuries, and he still needs to learn how to pitch. Like a 10% walk rate ain't great. And you tack on the lack of volume there. Like that there's a low floor to go with that high ceiling for next year. So that's going to be someone who I really need to dive in on this offseason and check out. Someone who's pretty fascinating to me.
Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom has created weight management programs that are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. So stop chasing health trends and join the millions who have lost weight with Noom. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's NOOM.com to sign up for your trial today.
I know you're not probably, well, you might be prepared. I'm not going to downsize, not credit you on this, but you mentioned a young pitcher with good strikeout stuff, but lots of walks. Innings slash injuries are a concern. Obviously, we'll do more discussion for 2023, but just for fun, at this point in time, one's pitching right now and one isn't, so that might make it easier. Edward Cabrera or Aaron Ashby?
Man, I'll go Cabrera.
A lot of similarities in those two, if people dig in on them, but I think Cabrera might have the overall better stuff, but it's probably closer than we think. So that's an interesting.
That's a great comp. That's a, 53% ground ball rate for Edward Cabrera, 28%. That's like basically the same dude.
Yeah, you're welcome. Let's talk
Did
about
you just think of that. That was
yeah.
That was
while you were good. Talking, this is what I do. This is what I do for a living. Almost part of my living.
That's impressive.
I listen. I listen when people talk. Weekend matchups. The fun that is our weekend match. Like we have a golf outing on the line, and we might split this thing. This is like the craziest thing that takes place. Thanks to a Longo Grand Slam on Sunday to help propel me to victory. But I'll let Ryan recap the week before we get into this week's pick. But Dustin May was good, Ryan.
It's been a while, so I'm looking at our score, but I should probably share this on Twitter just for whoever is interested. But it is wild. We have split every single week so far. Neither of us has won both hitter and pitcher the same week. And actually, no, I take that back. Second week I swept, and so you must have caught it up somewhere. But yeah. Never mind. On the season, we are split, and it has felt like every week we're splitting the same. But yeah, I kind of cheated a little bit. Took Dustin May, who was eligible in the player pool.
Yes, it was legal.
2% rostered.
It was legal
in 12 teamers on the NFBC. 9 Ks looked fantastic. Easy opponent, but Savali only got 4-4. Actually, Savali got rained out, I think, so he didn't even.
That was his
weekend,
Monday
but
start.
I didn't check the constitution for that one, but I still gave you a little 4 strikeouts there. Longoria, you took the Coors angle. It wasn't going to work until Sunday, but had a fantastic bare hand throw in the ninth inning as well. That was the Evan Longoria game last Sunday at Coors. But anyway, we split last week, so. At it again this week.
On to this week. And for those that are new to the game, we just preview the weekend matchups. If anyone wants to make some fab moves for the weekend, do the good pitching matchups, the not so good, the good hitting matchups, all those kind of things, thanks to the Baseball HQ weekly planner. And then we each pick a hitter and a pitcher based on 50% or less rostered on 12-team NFBC OCs. So it's a lot of fun in that regard. And we are tied 8-8 going into this week of action. We have like 5, maybe 6 more weeks to go, something like that. So it'll be fun yet again. So Ryan, why don't you highlight some of the matchups you're looking forward to this week before we get into our picks?
It's weird this weekend. Like there's not a lot of like even matchups. There's a lot of bad teams playing good teams, or at least, you know, postseason contending teams. So like the most difficult matchups are, and this isn't all because of the hitters, the lineup's own futility. It's that combination of that and a great rotation they're facing. So the Marlins have HQ's hardest matchup rating of the weekend. They go to LA, or they host LA. So that's going to be rough. The Pirates go to Philly. The Angels go to Toronto. Kansas City hosts San Diego. And the Rockies go to the Mets. So like, there's just a lot of bad lineups facing a lot of good pitching this weekend. And I mean, takeaway wise, like a lot of times I look at those bad lineups to try and get playing time and kind of stream those guys, but this week probably not, just given the given the tough overall matchups that I kind of just mentioned. So I think the most intriguing matchup of the week is Baltimore at Houston. If Baltimore wants to make a legitimate run at this, they have to go to Houston and they have to face McCullers or Keedy and Verlander. Like that's gonna be tough for Baltimore, but we'll see how they fare. But yeah, anyone Baltimore hitters, that's another tough matchup.
That's literally this is your playoff chance, guys. Like this is what you would see in the postseason, so see what you got. I like that one. Cleveland, Seattle's got some vibes to it because Cleveland's leading the Central.
Yep.
So that's got a little bit of postseason implications to it. And then the other one, Atlanta, St. Louis, that's gonna be fun. Atlanta at St. Louis. You're going to get some Jomo over the weekend, some Max Fried, I believe, over the weekend. So you have Spencer Strider goes on Friday night. So you'll have some fun in that series as well. But yeah, not a lot of great hitting matches. One of the best is Philadelphia versus Pittsburgh, of course. That just makes too much sense because Philly's hitting everything right now. And Harper should be back any day. So keep that one on your radar, folks. He's just doing Harper things. And funny thing, mentioned in our chat from the draft we did, he's technically not eligible in the outfield yet for next season. So keep that in mind. Was it one more game he needs or two more games?
I think two more games. I don't know if we'll get there. We'll see.
He might be util only because right now they just want him to DH. They just want the bat. I don't know if he's healthy enough to play the outfield yet. And that surprised me when they said that. So he might get the JD Martinez, Jordan Alvarez treatment for a bit. So keep that in mind as well.
The other thing I like to look at, too, is just handedness, left-righty, and kind of target anyone that either faces all lefties, which isn't as common, or all righties. A couple big ones there. Philly has our easiest matchup rating. They get all right-handers against Pittsburgh. Would be a great weekend, perhaps, for Derek Hall, who I guess got sent down to the minors.
So mad about that.
That was weird. Any Houston lefties that are available, like, would have been a great weekend for Chaz McCormick, but he's hurt, so keep an eye on that. But potentially three lefties against for San Diego at Kansas City. I'm not sure who the third one is. It might just be a 2-1 split. But any righties on San Diego this weekend going to Kansas City is pretty juicy as well. It looks like Jackson Kowar is pitching Saturday for Kansas City, so he might be sandwiched between two lefties, Bubich and Daniel Lynch. But That's pretty meager competition. So San Diego, I like, especially need right-handed bats there. Even like maybe even a Will Myers weekend. I don't know.
Potentially Myers, but Drury, Machado, they're going to have some fun this weekend. So enjoy that one for sure. And the one I'll mention, might as well get into it. Let's talk about our picks for the week. I'll save that caveat for in a second here. But I'm going to start off with the pitching pick because that's where I was going to go with this one. And I need help. So Brian let me pick both picks first this week, which is a rarity in our battle here. And I'm with Drew Smyly. And I've talked about this. I've tweeted about it. Whatever you want to talk about. The Brewers, it's really bizarre because you look at their team. McCutchen hits lefties well. Keston Hira hits lefties well. Power-wise is what I'm saying. They have a handful of guys hit lefties well. Also, as a team, they strike out almost 32% of the time versus lefties over the last month, with a sub 200 batting average, ISO below 100, horrible. Like, they're just not good versus left-handed pitching. And we've seen that firsthand. Heaney struck them all out. Anderson struck them all out. So I took our boy here, Drew Smyly, who's been very, very effective of late. Strikeouts have been there. We've seen some pitch mix changes. Like, we talked about him a week or so ago as a potential dude. So I like what we're seeing there. A guy I wanted to take, he's not eligible, but if anybody wants to stream him, probably available on Yahoo or something. Justin Steele pitches on Friday, and he's been a monster when it comes to strikeouts, so that's where that's going to go. But I'm taking Drew Smyly and hoping this run of just the Brewers not being able to hit left-handed pitching continues, and I get 5, 6, maybe 7 strikeouts in this one.
And Drew Smyly, so he's actually, when we transition to the Bloom Board, has actually switched his pitch mix more than anybody else in baseball since the All-Star break. And the last 5 starts, he's been fantastic. And I know that's kind of cherry picking, but that's just what we show on HQ his last 31 days. But 2.57 ERA, 1.11 whip, looked really good against the Cardinals in his last start. That was an awesome matchup. That was against Jordan Montgomery. That was a 0-0 game. Yep. The only run in that game was an Albert Pujols home run, number 693. So that was actually, that was a really fun watch, especially because it turned out well for Jomo. But yeah, Drew Smyly was a great pick. Pitching, I feel like we say this every weekend, it was really thin. One thing I also noticed, I don't know if you noticed this, Bubba, there are guys who are out for the season that have been out. Like, John Gray is still 25% rostered in 12
football
teamers.
Football season, Ryan. Football.
Yeah. That was very apparent for me this week. I was looking at guys in, like, that 25-35% range. There's a few that not only are recently hurt, but have been hurt. So, again, if you're still grinding away with us, that's just example number, 55 of how you can grind away and make up ground here in September. I went with, it's funny, I actually was originally going to go with Trevor Rogers, and kind of funny story here. Like, Rogers was supposed to, I guess, originally pitch Friday night against LA. And right before we started recording, Bubba sent a little tweet to me about Rodgers' rehab start. I guess he struck out like 12 tonight in AAA, and you asked if I'm back in. I'm not, but the pitching options were so thin that I was going to go with Rodgers. I went with Austin Voth instead, because he is actually pitching this weekend. I think you'll crush me this weekend. I think Smiley's gonna rack up some K's. So Voth at least has a double digit swing strike rate. His last five starts, strikeouts of 6, 5, 5, 3, and 3. Recently at Toronto, so like you're not gonna get many K's against those guys or last too deep into the game, but like some of the changes that he made recently, and is at least missing some bats with that 11% swing strike over the last month. So we'll see. 2.40 ERA, 1.17 WHIP the last month. Like a lot of that is luck driven, but the results have at least been there lately.
Yeah, he's been much better of late, like you mentioned. So there's been some viability to him. You never know. Just takes a K an inning. Give you five innings, and that usually wins some of these weeks. So anything is possible.
It is at Houston, though. I do need to add. So it's going to be
trickier.
Hard.
It's a trickier one, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. Who is your bat for this week?
I feel a lot better about this one. I think I'll get you in hitting this week. I went with Brendan Donovan in this for St. Louis, and this kind of goes back to what I was just saying about targeting, kind of playing that lefty righty game. Donovan's been hitting second pretty much every day for a St. Louis lineup that is just mashing. So he's right in front of potential Triple Crown winner Paul Goldschmidt and then Nolan Arenado. Cardinals get three games against Atlanta, like you just said, Bubba, but it's all right-handed pitching. So I just think Donovan, the platoon works, the lineup spot works. I think he's going to get a bunch of at-bats and score some runs.
Yep, don't hate it at all. For those that don't remember, we play hits, runs, and RBIs. That's what we add up together. So I'm going with Harold Ramirez of the Tampa Bay Rays going up against the Boston Red Sox and that wonderful bullpen and just rough shot pitching staff right now. And the reason I'm going Harold Ramirez is since he's returned from the IL on the 16th, he's hit safely in every single baseball game. He has 12 hits, 5 runs scored, and 6 RBIs. For the quick math at home, it's 23 points in our game in about 8 games or whatever it is here. He's hitting .343. And one thing about Harold Ramirez is he's always been a really good hitter. Great contact hitter. Power is not his biggest thing, but he hits right in the middle of the order, hitting third or fourth every day. The Rays will put up a handful of runs each night against that Boston team. I'd be shocked if they got shut out or something. And so he should be a part of that mix one way or another. So it's like the idea of looking for a leadoff hitter that can just accumulate counting stats. I'm kind of doing that with Harold Ramirez, hitting third or fourth in that lineup every day. He's not one of the platoon guys in Tampa Bay. And again, Boston's just been dreadful right now. The overall rating for the weekend for Tampa Bay is not great, but it's not bad. It's 0.3. It's kind of like almost neutral, like a good, like not bad rating. So I'm going to Harold Ramirez, just hoping he is an accumulator this weekend. Kind of a Stephen Kwan-esque, like you had a couple weeks ago, that just crushed things. I'm going the Harold Ramirez route. This could be a fun one because Ramirez versus Donovan, they're both counting stat guys that just pepper base hits. So this could be a really interesting, like this could be like an 11 to 10 week or something. It could be fun.
And it's funny, like, and this is like a shortcoming. This is just my preconceived notions playing into my decision-making, which isn't always good, but we're all learning. I always think of the Rays as like a platoon happy team, and maybe they are, but they've had a lot of injuries, and they've got Yanni Diaz, they've got Harold Ramirez, Randy Arozarena, and Manny Margot pretty much playing every day. And the Rays have faced lefties and righties over the last week, and those guys are really not missed. Out of those four, Yandy Diaz has missed one game. The rest of those guys have all played every single day. So that's something I need to work on. I kind of dismiss those Rays bats as a platoon team. I'm not going to kind of stream. The volume's not going to be there. I like that.
I think it's a combination of the injuries have caught up to them, and we've seen it in the past, and I mentioned it with about their bullpen the other day, is when they get closer to the postseason, they almost lock in. Like, okay, now we've tested everything out. We've felt everything out. Now, these are our guys. We're going to war type thing. So we'll see. More so with the bullpen than the starting lineup, of course. But, yeah, that could be something to it as well. Bloom board season. It's always bloom board season around here, which is a great thing. So I'll give you the floor here. This is a fun one. Again, a lot of interaction. So we'll kind of go. I think I'm just going to go through the listener questions to talk about the board, the players on the board, and then we'll hit some more up after that because they highlight a bunch of guys here. So what is this board? Why don't you let us know what's going on?
So this is honestly one of my favorite ones, just because, and I've talked about this a few times on the pod, like pitchers can reinvent themselves in season a lot more. And this is actually like the tout table, tout wars question that got brought up. It's like, what do you look for recent hot streaks for hitters, pitchers, that sort of thing. I look at pitch mix changes, velocity changes for pitchers, and that's the kind of stuff that you can kind of act on and react to very quickly in season. So what this board is I'm looking at, since the All-Star break, I'm looking at the starting pitchers that have changed their pitch mix the most from pre-All-Star break to post-All-Star break. And we got a few questions. Well, like, how do you actually quantify that? What I do is I call this, I'm not a marketing major. I call this change score. That is a terrible name, but it's just something that I made up that quantifies how much a pitcher has changed their pitch mix. So it's from 0 to 100%. If a pitcher, and it's just the absolute value of the difference of the usage of each of your pitches. So if a pitcher throws 20% curveballs before the All-Star break, upset to 30% curveballs, that's a score of 10. I add that up across every single pitch in a pitcher's arsenal to get that number. So a score of 0 basically means a pitcher has not changed his pitch mix at all. He threw 30% sliders before, 30% after, through, not just for ease of math, 60% fastballs before, 60% fastballs after. There's no actual difference in those two values for each pitch. On the other hand, someone who just completely reinvents their arsenal, they're at 100 because they would go from like 0 to 55 if they just throw a new cutter and they fade their fastball 55 to 0. Like that would add. So I basically just take that percentage usage difference and add it all up and throw it on a board. And the other thing, like that all, and then we'll get into some more of the questions, is like a pitch mix change isn't always like automatically a good thing. And we'll see from some of the names that show up on this board. It's just like, if you see a pitch mix change, take that deeper look. Have their skills recently changed to kind of coincide with that pitch mix change? And then that's where I start to get interested. And so I threw that on the board as well, as I took their ERA whip and their strikeout minus walk ratio since the All-Star break, just to kind of highlight which guys it's, you know, the change is working for and which guys it's not.
And as usual, these boards are great starting points to dig in deeper, as Ryan said. So like he mentioned some key stats here that we look at, but you could also add on to that something similar as what Toby loves to do. Look at rolling graphs. You'll see like, hey, mm-hmm. when did the pitch mix date start? Now look at a graph. It's just visual. You know, you look at numbers. It's like, hey, this went up, this went down. Now, okay, maybe there really is something to this. And you can do a lot more stats real quickly on Fangraphs that'll showcase all that stuff for you and give you a real idea if this is real, if it's kind of a fluky looking thing, like, oh, he's getting more strikeouts, but really the contacts or whatever is still the same or something like that. So things along those lines that you can check out as well that can help you dig deeper on these type of scenarios. All right. Let's get into listener questions. I think we had a lot, or comments / questions. But why is my phone? There we go. I figured this was the first one. So Ryan mentioned that there's some guys that don't perform as well with the pitching mix change. And Dynasty Junkie made a comment. The more things change, the more they stay the same. This will be Patrick Corbin's 2023 fantasy profile. If you look at Patrick Corbin, he had a 39 change on the rating scale here. But he has a 10.67 ERA, 2.3 whip, and a 10% K to walk. So, Ryan, more things stay the same.
Yeah, and so this is a prime example of something that's not working out. And so, like, before we kind of dive a little bit deeper, just to give some context, you mentioned a 39 change. That means Corbin has basically flipped 39% of his pitch mix, and that ranks sixth most. So the list in front of Corbin is Drew Smyly, number one, 51. George Kirby, number two, Robbie Ray, so two Mariners. That's another thing to kind of look at. Are these teammates? Do they have the same pitching coach? That sort of thing. Number four is Cole Irvin, who's been pretty hot lately. Ranger Suarez, 5, and then Corbin, 6. So that's kind of your leaderboard of the board before we kind of go a little bit deeper into these guys. But yeah, like Corbin, out of anyone on this list, a 10.67 ERA, a 2.30 whip. Since the All-Star break, a strikeout minus walk of 10, which is really bad. He's not throwing strikes. He's not missing bats. He's trying different things. He shows up on this change score because he's throwing sinkers about 50% of the time since the All-Star break. The problem with that is he's throwing his slider, which used to be one of the best pitches in baseball and still is Patrick Corbin's best pitch. That usage has gone from 35% in June, 29% July, 22% in August. So Corbin's not throwing that slider really much at all, and replacing it with sinkers and fastballs, like it's not working out, and it sucks. But I the other kind of question as you dig deeper is like, why? Why is Patrick Corbin not throwing his slider? Why is he only throwing it 22% of the time, when in his heyday it was like 35-40% of the time and nobody could hit it?
It makes you wonder, like, is he hurt? Is right. there something we're not paying attention to here? Yep. Like, because why would you not throw that pitch? Like, we say it time and time again. If you don't have a heavy sinker, like a fast, like Alcantara or some of these other dudes that throw a heavy sinker, and then you're just throwing a batting practice fastball if you're not locating it. So definitely for Corbin, that's not going to cut it. So it's very, very troublesome for a guy that I thought would be able to bounce back at the end of last season. But
you were kind of – you were not to – I mean, this is hindsight, but I could see it. I totally understand, but we were both pretty high on him entering – relatively high. Saying it could happen.
I will say the caveat is, and I told everybody this, I only drafted him in draft champions formats, the deep ones. I wasn't drafting him in, like, 12-team OCs and stuff. That was not a part of the plan, the plan there. Free. So, yeah. A Little Book of Calm has a two-parter here for us. Very cool board. Recently, Eno Saris showed that 90% of starting pitchers that increase their stuff plus by 5 or more points from 2021 to 2022 change their pitch mix. Kind of makes sense. You could see that. Number one, how many starts does it take to recognize a true change versus a team-specific approach? Yeah. And two, how much do you think the results are driven by surprise and opponents having out-of-date knowledge about the pitcher? That's actually both pretty interesting stuff. He said, P.S. Sorry if I'm spilling stuff I shouldn't from behind a paywall.
So first off, then these are fantastic. And this is why I love pitching, man. This is why I love like diving into this stuff. Cause it's just not, it's an art, man. Like, so a couple things, stuff plus, if, I mean, everyone probably who listens to us knows Eno, hopefully subscribes to The Athletic. It's a really good metric. I think the actual guts of it, the formulas are still proprietary at this point, but it is a way that Eno quantifies kind of the quality of pitches based on movement, velocity, whatever else. So that's really cool to check out. And you can kind of use that in addition to pitch mix changes to say, you know, the Corbin example, is he throwing his best pitch less often? You know, that maybe that's why this pitch mix change is not working. To go to the second question, how many starts does this take? I would need to look into that. What I will say is I thought about doing this board just looking since like the trade deadline, since August, but a lot of pitch mix changes aren't really changes. It's more, I'm pitching against this lineup that has, you know, maybe is more lefty centric. Another lineup is more right-handed centric. Most pitchers have different arsenals depending on handedness of the batter. So if you look at like start to start or even like 2 to 3 starts at a time, those usage patterns can really get thrown off by just, you know, one kind of unicorn lineup or whatever. So I try to at least go back and look at like 5 or 6 starts just so that kind of like start to start flukiness gets washed out a little bit. But that is one of the risks in doing this kind of analysis, is to say, oh, his last 2 starts, he threw, you know, curveballs. Well, maybe that was the plan of attack against that lineup. And that there is a difference there. So that's a really good question and a good point. Well.
Yeah, and it's like we talked about it recently with like Aaron Civale, since he came back from the IL, a lot of heavy curveballs. Now, is that a thing, dude? And it's only been like 2 starts, so it was it. And it was more so the first start than the second. So was it a matchup thing, or is he, when he rehabbed, all of a sudden like, I want to throw my curveball more often? So maybe he does it for 3 more starts, and it's like, okay, well, maybe this is a pitch mix thing. So it's hard, like you said, matchups are matchups. Certain teams are bad, like. I know it's a lefty-righty thing, but we talked about how the Brewers are so bad. Well, they might be bad because lefties throw like a slider that crushes the right-handed pitcher, the right-handed hitters or something. So you see a lot of sliders that time. So that's why maybe Steele dominates them, because he's a heavy slider guy now. Just little things like that. So yeah, you made a good point on that one, that it could definitely dictate how certain things go.
And the last good point on that too, I think that third part of this question is like, yes, this is to that new pitch mix. So, Smiley's counter adjustment to that going to be next season kind of a thing. So it's just an never ending game of cat and mouse. And that's what makes this stuff fun.
Yeah. One of the things I always remember from baseball is just by playing baseball. But then like Mike Kruko says it on the Giants broadcast all the time when like new hitters come up and struggle or vice versa. It's the beautiful game that is pitching versus hitting. The art of pitching is to deceive and confuse the hitter. The art of the hitter is to figure out the pitcher, and then it's all about making adjustments. So that's where the pitch mix come in, like you said. So it's an ever evolving massive game of like chess. Like, how can we figure this out? That's why there's scouting profiles. That's why there's all this data out there. So it makes it very, very interesting. Kyle Bland asks, interesting stuff. I'm curious how you got to that change number. Is that the sum of absolute change? He explained that. So we're good there, Kyle. But yeah, pretty
Kyle, much. That is correct. The sum of absolute change, like the absolute value, the difference of each pitch usage added up across their entire arsenal.
Eddie Manet says, not on the list, but Ross Stripling is throwing a changeup more and getting good results. That's true. Since he's come back from the IL, he is striking guys out much more regularly, which is great to see. I didn't realize it was a massive pitch mix change, but yeah, Stripling has looked like he was good beforehand, but he looks a bit more dominating since he's come back, which is phenomenal to see.
So the thing with Stripling, and yes, like if I change this date, the reason Stripling doesn't show up on this board is I'm just looking since the All-Star break. But if I push this back to say, maybe I know a couple weeks ago we looked at hitter changes from the live ball versus the dead ball. Maybe if I threw this back to like May 15th, Ross Stripling would show up. But that's a great point. Ross Stripling, the changeup is elite. 21% swing strike rate this season and a 55% ground ball rate. There's not many pitches in baseball that get that combination of whiffs and ground balls. And then on top of that, Stripling has bumped up the usage of his changeup from 15% last year to 25% this year. And he's made room for that by throwing his four seamer only 35% of the time. So like Ross Stripling has developed into a legitimate three-pitch pitcher. He's got the slider that he's also bumped up to from 18 to 23%. But that's just an example of, yeah, someone throwing their best pitch more often. And Ross Stripling's been doing it for a few months now. Teams know, and they have still not been able to catch up to it. So that's a perfect example of like who someone on this board is that you could kind of believe in and buy into. It's someone who has shown better skills, and the reason why is he's switched up his pitch mix, throwing an elite pitch 10% more of the time.
Mike Carter has two questions about pitchers. They're not on this board, but they are justifiably interesting questions here. Should I be iffy on Detmers? Reed Detmers, who we all made fun of for the no-hitter and everything else, but since he's come back, there is a pitch mix change. It's very evident, and he's been much more dominant. So what's your thoughts on Detmers?
He's at the bottom. He's at the bottom of this board. So 34.
I'm an idiot.
He's bolded, man. Come on. Yeah. No, I'm kidding. slider. And not only just more sliders, but he kind of reshaped his slider. And we picked up on this during Reed Detmers kind of
first stint. Couple games back.
Yeah. I started with kind of the end of AAA and his first couple games back. So that's another great example, Mike, of someone who is throwing his best pitch more often. It's a different slider than what we saw as well during the season. So that is very interesting to me and makes me want to buy in. Of course, we just talked about this. The league now knows what this new slider looks like and how often he throws it. So let's see how Reed Detmers finishes out the rest of the season. I know he won't get much run support, but
no, he won't. Even with Trout back, it's the shell of Mike Trout.
Mike Ford.
And Mike Ford, it's unbelievable. That's so funny. I didn't realize that's who they called up for that. That's bad. He had a stint with the Giants last year. I remember how bad that was.
Did he?
Yeah, brief stint.
I didn't even know that. He's 30, man.
Crazy. It's crazy. But like, just for instance, since he's returned, Detmers has returned July 8th. In the West, he's faced Houston, Texas, Seattle once. He's going to face them again. That's why I wanted to mention them, because the other teams he might not face again. So now, like you said, it's okay. These teams saw him the first time. And, you know, against those teams, he struck out 6 Astros, 12 Rangers, and 7 Mariners. Let's see how that changes this next time around. If it does, maybe it doesn't. Maybe he mixes it up even more and, you know, leads off with the slider or whatever. I don't know. But it could be interesting, but it definitely something to monitor, as you said. The other pitcher he mentioned, and I triple checked, he's not on this list, and that is Lucas Giolito, who it just gets seems like it gets bad to worse, and then he gets like one kind of good start, which kind of makes you think he's back, and then it gets bad again. And righties are hitting him very well right now. It's like a reverse splits thing with him. So I don't know what's going on with Giolito. It's been tough.
I'm still like, yeah, it's been tough, but I don't know. I maybe I'll go kind of down on the ship, or maybe I'll be in on Giolito next season. But like, even in August, a Giolito 13% swinging strike rate and a 35% ball rate. Both of those are two metrics that I really like to look at that are, we call them sub indicators at Baseball HQ. But how often you throwing strikes, how often you missing bats. And Giolito is not, I wouldn't say as good as ever in that department, but certainly well above average. So I don't know if it comes back this year. Like, it's just, it's gotten really rough for him, but I'm probably going to be in on Lucas Giolito, who did not get picked.
I just looked outside. I pulled it up as you were talking. He did not get picked in the first seven rounds.
So like eighth, ninth round Giolito.
And a 15 teamer.
I think I go back in.
Post pick 100. Like, this could be your SP3 or SP4. Like, that's right. Definitely worth the gamble. This is what Robbie Ray was a couple years ago. Almost what Luis Castillo was last year. He was more of like a round four-ish guy. So you're getting even a bigger discount, but you guys get the gist of what I'm getting at here. Like, it's a guy that won't cost you as much. So it's one of those, if you have to drop him, it is what it is. At the same time, if he figures it out, he's an ace. He's a first or second. Like, he was in a 15, there was discussions of him on the 1-2 turn. So like, he's that good if you really want to break it down. So it could be interesting with Giolito as we get going. Maybe we'll find out he had a little injury or something, has to figure it out. We'll see how that goes. Eric Samulski asks, not on the list, but Jeffrey Springs has really upped the slider usage from June on. And then he has a Glenn Otto part as well, has gone more sinker heavy. Curious if you're in on either of these guys this year or next.
That was
almost picked him this week. No, I'm kidding.
I picked up Otto for a two step a few months ago. He won both games. It was great, but that was the most harrowing fantasy baseball experience that I've had this year. Just the control. Like, the control is not there. I think last start or two starts ago, walked five. Like, Jeffrey Springs. So, and that this was an excellent podcast with Samulski this week. I listened to most of it. Didn't get all the way through.
He's a sharp dude. Like,
yes. Good dude. And I think new dad and
yes, new dad. Yes,
awesome new dad. Sunday newsletter. So anyone who does not and has been pumping out the newsletter since the birth of the child. So
it's impressive.
Things are going well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's in it. But thanks for the question. And yeah, the Springs slider, a little bit more usage. He's actually thrown his changeup a little bit more. The changeup is really, for Springs, what interests me the most. Like, just a minor uptick in usage, 28% last season, 34% this year, but 23% swing strike on the changeup. That's really good. And like Eric says, the slider usage in season has gone up a little bit. You look at those, again, same sub indicators, the swing strike and the strike percentage are fantastic. I was a little bit worried with Springs, just with kind of the volume. What are they going to do in terms of just like workload, but also on a per start basis. But Springs, his last few games, let's see what's his pitch count.
And he's 98 pitches. Back out. Yeah, he's back out.
I mean, he's good. Actually, four of his last five starts have been over 80 pitches. So yep. I'm very excited around Jeffrey Springs.
Yeah, Springs is a guy I'm very excited to hopefully get some shares of next year. I like what we're seeing from him in a big, big way. So Otto streaming once in a while, but Springs I'm all in on for sure.
Just don't watch Otto. Don't watch the start.
I think there should be like a moral to all of it. Just if you're streaming any pitcher, don't watch that start. Just don't watch it, because you're streaming them for a reason. They're on the waiver wire for a reason, and you're streaming them because you need the volume. So just don't watch them. That's your bet. Gaman8 says, chasing wins for the weekend is the best option, either Glenn Otto or Yarbrough as the bulk pitcher, or do you trust Detmers despite the Toronto matchup? I'd almost lean Detmers, honestly, in that matchup, because Toronto's been sketchy. They haven't been as dominating. But then again, you got Yarbrough in a good matchup as the long reliever that could sneak in a win.
Yeah,
I lean Yarbrough probably the more I think about it, but it's not pretty.
I mean, if we're talking strictly wins, Yarbrough's the guy. Reed Detmers is the best pitcher of this bunch for a lot of reasons we just talked about. It's just banking on the Angels beating the Blue Jays right now is is not really a winning play. Yarbrough, it just kind of all depends. Is he going to start? Is he going to be the bulk? He had been the bulk in three of his last four outings, got one win out of those three, actually went four innings at the Yankees on August 15th. Four innings, no runs, six strikeouts. But then last week started Kansas City, was great, but only went 4.1 innings. So Yarbrough's the play if he's, as weird as it sounds, if he's not the starter, if he's the bulk guy. If not, I'd go Detmers and Nato, number three.
Yeah, Nato, number three. We got a couple more minutes here, so we'll pick on some more guys on this list that I wanted to ask you questions. We already talked Smiley earlier, and for obvious reasons, he's made some huge changes, but I want to hit on Robbie Ray. Because this was a funny year for Robbie Ray. It started out with people already going, see, why'd you waste a pick on Robbie Ray? And then he made a pitch mix change then and started pitching really well. And now he's made another pitch mix change. And the ERA and the whip, those numbers look great. Or actually, they don't. The K to walk looks great, but the ERA and whip are struggling. He's back to walking guys. He's given up home runs. It's been kind of rocky with Robbie Ray. So what are you seeing with this recent pitch mix change? He rates out the third, I guess, heaviest change in your list.
Yeah, and for Ray, it's all been about, and we kind of alluded to this before, but he's throwing a new slash old pitch. He's throwing a two-seamer that I think Robbie Ray has not thrown. It's in like 5 or 6 years. I read an article where it was kind of interesting. Scott Service went out in the middle of a game, mound visit, to talk to Ray, and basically during that mound visit, they just said, hey, let's just try this two-seamer. It's not working, what you're currently doing. And so Ray went back to the two-seamer and did well for a little while. And it's just been a roller coaster for Robbie Ray this season. Like, you look at the monthly ERAs, 4.15, 5.34 the first 2 months, then a 2.19 ERA in June, 5.40 July, then back to 208 in August. He's actually been really good in August, and despite kind of the walks that we've seen. So kind of short end of the summary is I still like Robbie Ray. I think in terms of like strikeouts, I can see a world where he leads the majors in strikeouts next season. Like, the whiffs are there. The pitches look great. It's just all about that walk rate. And I don't know if another pitch mix change is gonna help that. He's just got to harness that control. And he's shown spurts of it, but then he gives up five walks August 10th against the Yankees and just kind of gives it all back. Gave up four walks to the Astros, two starts before that. So it's just kind of like one step forward, half a step back.
Yeah, it's a frustrating one for sure with Robbie Ray. I want to mention also Ranger Suarez here. He's made a big change. Last year, he came on in the second half with gangbusters, one of the best pitchers in all of baseball. Starts out the year this year very suspect, kind of was losing a potential spot in rotation, all these concerns. But now he's got a 1.54 ERA, 1.02 whip, and a 16% K to walk over the last since the break, basically. And it's been very, very impressive looking at Ranger Suarez, and he has made a serious pitch mix change. So what do you got on this one? Because while you were talking, I was looking at, like, I didn't do month to month for last season, but I was trying to see if there's anything different, and they kind of line up to last season to this season. It's very similar, so I didn't see a big change. But what do you see on Ranger Suarez?
A lot better skills in the second half. So, and this coincides with the pitch mix change. He's kind of, and the thing with Ranger Suarez, and this is one thing where, like, the data is not going to pick it up, but I've read things where he's actually throwing like two kinds of changeups. And so that's been a big thing, but in terms of like pitch classification, it's all the same pitch. So it shows that he's throwing like 20% changeups, but he actually has two different kinds, which is kind of crazy. So he introduced a second changeup, but then he also is throwing the cutter. Didn't even throw it in April and May, and is now throwing the cutter almost 20% of the time in August. So you take that different pitch mix, but then on top of that, you look at the change in skills, swinging strike rate. For Ranger Suarez, from 8% in the first half, which is terrible, 12% in the second half, really good. Strikeouts have gone up, walks have gone down. Like, everything's going in the right place with Ranger Suarez. You're not like, I mean, in terms of like trading, that sort of thing, like, I mean, the dude has a 1.54 ERA over his last seven starts, right? In the second half, like, he's not that good. But I could see him settling in like 3 ERA type pitcher with this mix, with the ground balls that he gets, with the whiffs and the good control with this new mix. It's vintage, and I say vintage, but it's kind of what we saw from him in the second half last season.
Yeah, it's going to suck me back in come draft season if he keeps doing this. And it's just like, it's one of those things that we'd all love to know is, why weren't you doing this before? Like, what was the reasoning behind this? And I guess we'll never know. Maybe they saw something in scouting or something. I don't know. He didn't have a feel for it at the time, so who knows.
Speaking of pitch mix changes, Sheldon Noisy's pitching right now, throwing 45 mile an hour. They're calling it a slider.
What's the score?
It's 13-4 Yankees over the A's.
Well, speaking of position players pitching, did you see Christian Betancourt throwing for the Rays the other night?
Yeah.
He threw like 96 or something.
Hey, wow. Yeah.
He's throwing gas. Cheddar. I got at least one more I want to ask you before we head out, unless there's some other ones you want. But I wanted to also, like we talked about, you know, not all pitch mix changes are for the good. Robbie Ray's ratios went up. We talked about a few others. I want to mention Noah Syndergaard. He's got a 3.23 ERA, 1.3 WHIP during this, which, you know, not bad. It is what it is. But a 10% K to walk. He's not fooling anybody. He's not striking guys out. And I think one of the big reasons before I give you the floor is he's throwing the sinker so freaking much. Like I almost like just go right away from any guy that goes to a heavy sinker usage. It just doesn't. We kind of hinted on it with some other guys. It just doesn't. Like, I love hearing slider or something. Sinker scares me. And when you got a guy like Syndergaard, who he grew up when he first saw him, like he throws gas, he fools guys, he all this stuff. We know he's been hurt. He's trying to get through injuries, and now he's going to a heavy sinker. It's like, this is not making me feel warm and fuzzy about this guy. So what do you have on Noah Syndergaard?
Yeah. Throwing a bad pitch more often is not the way to do it. And yeah, like the skills look terrible. The sinker itself it gets ground balls. We'll say that. I mean, that's what a sinker should do. But a 6% swinging strike, like that's just not, I mean, the four seamer's back been really, actually a pretty decent pitch. I kind of wish Syndergaard would just go four seam changeup and just kind of mix a sinker in every now and then. Cause a sinker, yeah, just does not miss bats. And like you said, lately, the 10% strikeout minus walk is bad. And 8% swinging strike rate is really bad. That's what Syndergaard has in the second half. Yes, has the 3.63 ERA. But at HQ, we've got almost a 5 expected ERA. So like, that's another one where, yeah, the change, but let's look at the skills since he has made those changes. And it doesn't look great, man. No. Doesn't look great.
Doesn't look great at all. And the last one I will mention is Jose Suarez. This is one I've actually added him in a few leagues recently for streaming options. Like, yeah, it was last year he showed some signs of some viability, and then it just hasn't really been like a continuous thing for him. But he's got 3.41 ERA, 1.11 WHIP, and an 18% K to walk. He's had some very good starts, some kind of okay starts, but that's what you get from a guy like Jose Suarez. We're getting more good than bad, let's put it that way. So what are you seeing in the pitch mixes that stands out as a good plus situation?
So with Suarez, and this is one where it's all, and we didn't really talk about this, but this is also another kind of, we're getting into small sample territory. Another thing to consider is competition. So yeah, Jose Suarez, since the All-Star break, and that's when we did this pitch mix change, yes, there's a mix. His first game after the All-Star break was against the Dodgers, gave up 6 runs, then didn't give up a run in his next 3 starts. And that's where a lot of these kind of quote-unquote gains are coming against. But those 3 starts was at Kansas City and then Oakland twice. And that so
helps.
Like,
helps a lot.
Yeah, that helps. That helps a lot. And he pitched well against those teams, which is great. I mean, that's better than not pitching well against those types of teams. He did what he was supposed to do, but then faced Seattle and Tampa the last 2 starts, gave up 3 runs in each of those. So I almost think more like, I don't know if these are actual gains or if this is just kind of the schedule playing pretty friendly to Suarez right now.
Yeah, I'm still kind of – I'm excited, but tempering, like you mentioned, the matchups. Like you said, that Tampa Bay start, he wasn't horrible, but he wasn't nearly as dominant as he was, like, first, of course, the A's. So it makes you wonder. And the pitch mix is an increased fastball, so it's one of those – you still got to locate it. He's not, like, blowing it by guys, so that could lead to trouble as well. Anybody else you wanted to highlight on this list?
Last guy I want to talk about is George Kirby. So – and this is – this is interesting. Like, so George Kirby, and I kind of rattled off the list earlier, but is number 2 on this list, a 46 change score. The interesting thing, since George Kirby made this pitch mix change, and I'll get into this in a second, he's throwing more sinkers, but there's a difference. Yeah. Since Kirby made this change, 26% strikeout minus walk, which is just
fantastic. A lot of that is like a minuscule walk rate. George Kirby has elite control, 2.43 RA, 1.11 whip since the All-Star break. The thing with George Kirby, he actually picked up this two-seamer from Robbie Ray. There's an interesting story. I was reading about it today, kind of in prep for the podcast, and he's just kind of talking to Robbie Ray, and Ray taught it to him. And the thing that makes this different with what we just talked about with Noah Syndergaard is the sinker is not George Kirby's primary pitch. George Kirby throws four pitches more than 15% of the time now with this new sinker. So he throws the four-seamer. He threw the four-seamer in the first half. Very four-seam heavy over half the time. He's dropped that down to kind of 36-37% in August. So not as reliant on the four-seamer. He's mixing in those sinkers just to give something else for batters to look at on the fastball side. The thing that I like about Kirby is A, he's held that walk rate throughout the sinker change so he can throw it for strikes, but he's also throwing his curveball and slider pretty much just as much as he did before the change. So it's more just kind of him picking up a different type of fastball with different types of movement that he can throw against different handed guys. So from that aspect, like, I really like that he's actually picked up the sinker, and it just gives batters something else to think about, and it's not so four-seam heavy. So that was one who, like, and I, George Kirby, I think I'm going to be I think I'm going to be really high on next season. Just the pinpoint control, he's getting whiffs, he's getting K's. Since he started mixing in more sinkers, the skills look really good for him.
And see, like, unlike like a Syndergaard or something, his sinker is a heavier sinker. So I'm a fan of that more so than just these guys that, like, Corbin, who it's not going to cut it. So it's something along those lines. And then he also mentioned the way it's like feeding off the fastball. It's not taking away from the slider or something, which is a big difference yep. in the pitch mix thing. And that's why it's an art. Pitching is an art, an absolute art on changing velocities, changing movements, keeping guys off balanced.
And just it's sequencing crazy. And like, mm-hmm. How they tunneling. And could go on for a while on it. Yeah. But yeah, I just think that just to kind of put a bow on this, like, it's interesting to me and put this in your off season, kind of tuck this away for the off season. But when you see kind of a change in skill first to second half or a hot September, go that kind of extra level and see if there was a pitch mix change, velocity change kind of thing to kind of validate or invalidate those change in results during the season.
Sweet. Yeah. Looking forward to seeing where this goes and more bloom boards to follow as it's getting it's fun. I'm like, it's crazy. Like, I always laugh. I'm like, I wonder what Ryan's going to come up with this week, because it's tough this time of the year to get creative on what's going to be relevant type deal. But these are fun ones. Definitely, like, there's names on this board that will be worth streaming for the last 5 weeks or the 6 weeks of the season. So that's what makes it exciting. Keep grinding, keep doing all that fun stuff. But we'll wrap it up there, Ryan. Any final thoughts as I believe we have six more fab periods to go.
Six more fab periods. The bloom board ideas right now are kind of dry. So I was excited about this one. We'll see if I can come up with, maybe we'll do something about like remaining schedule or something next week. I don't know. Cause
I believe someone wrote an article that involves some remaining schedule most recently. Just
have some,
it out
have
there.
some background knowledge. could be fun to talk about that stuff. Cause
definitely September schedules, there's going to be things you can exploit 100%.
So I don't know. So. We'll see.
I like it. Well, you guys have to tune in next week to find out what crazy stuff we'll talk about, plus probably more injuries, because that's what's going on, and probably a split week in the matchups, because that's what we do. So come back next week and check it out. Check out Ryan on the old Twitter there at RyanBHQ, and his work over at BaseballHQ. I'm on Twitter at BDEntric, and don't forget, go sign up for First Pitch Arizona. But until next time, we'll catch you guys later.
Life's better with an auto policy from American Family Insurance. No matter what dreams you're driving towards. That's because our expert agents will make you feel totally protected with the right auto coverage at the right price. you'll also save up to 23% when you bundle auto with home. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.